Hi, everybody. This is Alan Fine, and this is for volume two of our tour of Japan. We're with Brett Plotz, who's the field operations team leader for Inside Japan, which is part of the Inside Travel Group. But we're going to talk about Kyoto in this episode, and this is Insider Travel Report. Brett, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Well, I enjoyed your tour of Tokyo. Let's dive into Kyoto now.
Let's do it. I love Kyoto. Kyoto's Kyoto, you know?
So, Brett, one of the great pleasures was being able to go so quickly from Tokyo to Kyoto, not have to go to an airport. It was just a pleasure to go on the bullet train. Let's talk a little bit about it.
I mean, the bullet train is it's a miracle. It is honestly the best way to get around Japan. Even I mean, even I even find the history fascinating in the fact that the bullet train, was basically Japan's gift to the world for the 1964 Olympics in Tokyo, right? And so you think, the train went from Tokyo to Osaka at the time on that kind of route, right, in 1964, and was, at the time the fastest train in the world. Now is even faster than what it was. But you think about, some of the stats of that and the fact that, on now, as of now, as of this year, the rest, all of Japan, based from north to south, is basically connected by the bullet train, which is a huge undertaking, especially when Japan is 70% mountains, right? To go through kind of these mountains and kind of go through everything, right? The bullet train itself, I mean, it depends on what bullet train you're taking, what different one, depending on if it stops or not. Will go typically around 330 miles or 330 kilometers per hour, right? And you think about all these things that are amazing, right? You think about, each bullet train, the Nozomi bullet train is 16 cars, has about, 1,000, 200, 1,500 people inside of it, right? Five times the amount of people in my entire town in Iowa where I grew up, right? You have all of that, right? But then you also have how on time it is and how much it runs. I mean, you have, let's say in 1 hour, you have, let's say, that original route from Kyoto or from Tokyo to Osaka, right? You'll have a bullet train leave typically every 7 to 10 minutes, which is outstanding to me. I mean, that is fascinating to be like, how can these trains keep going at this rate and really not be late that much? I mean, other countries struggle with that. Japan really does not struggle.
And also, I love the way you line up. You have your ticket. You know exactly which car, which seat, and it's marked. And there's no wasted time. You get right to the spot.
You're right. For the most part, it's very civilized. I mean, you know exactly where to stand. You know exactly what seat you're going to be in because it's on your ticket if you got a reserve ticket. And I mean, it all makes sense once you get there. And then once you're there, like you said before, rather than going to an airport, you are in at the end of the trip, you're in the city center, right? There's no security to go through. There's no bags to check. You're just bam, you're right there. Leave the station, walk to your hotel, and you're there rather than, having to get a train or a taxi or a car, they're 2 hours from the airport to the city center.
But I will say, as great as it is, as simple as it is, as civilized as it is, for the newcomer, it seems daunting. And so that's why it was great to have Inside Japan helping us.
It can seem, especially coming from somewhere where I never took trains growing up, to be like, well, how do I do this? You have to go into the train station, then into the bullet train platform and stuff. So it can be for sure. And so it is nice to have somebody kind of show you the ropes, but you're right. Once you kind of get in, it really does make sense.
Yeah, it did. And then we were veterans.
Exactly.
The train back was not a problem.
No, not a problem at all. I mean, and you're more confident, you can enjoy the ride a little bit more.
So we got to Kyoto, and the first thing we did was we marched up to this temple.
This is Nanzenji Temple. It's one of the most celebrated and oldest Buddhist temples in Kyoto. You're looking, one of the most famous aspects of it is the Sanmon Gate, which is one of the largest gates in Kyoto. It was built in 1628. Very, very famous in the fact that it kind of is one of the entrances to the Nanzenji complex. Kind of a funny story. Funny, but also historically significant story about this gate itself is that there was a kind of a legendary figure in Japan, kind of like a Robin Hood who did exist. His name was Goemon. He was an outlaw, is what he was. And the government at the time was trying to find him and everything and couldn't do it. And he kind of gave him the slip all the time. But the public loved him, right? Because he did a lot of good things for them. But anyway, at the end of his life, he was cornered at the very top of this actual gate is where they actually found him. Coolly, he said, you know, basically, you know, what took you so long? Which you can go up to. You can actually go up into this gate. You can go on the second floor and you can pretend like you're going one.
Like you're being captured, like you're on
exactly.
The run.
Hopefully a better ending, because Goemon himself was boiled in oil. So this is part of the Nanzenji complex here. And so you can see kind of the different ancillary buildings, kind of the courtyards and the sidewalks that kind of go in between them all. One of the features of the really any Buddhist temple is going to be the burning of incense. Do that for a number of reasons, for purification, for remembrance, and then also a lot of temples will just, it smells good, but a lot of times you can just buy some incense and you can, again, you can burn it for various reasons, whether it be purification or remembrance. Probably the most famous feature of Nanzenji is the aqueducts. And so they do have the oldest aqueducts in Japan. They were built in the early Meiji periods. We're talking the late 1800s. And they brought water in from Lake Biwa, which is the largest lake in Japan, all the way to Kyoto, dozens of kilometers, all the way into Kyoto. Now they no longer are necessary, but it's a cool contrast to kind of see a modern architecture when it comes to brick and right. and aqueducts right next to Nanzenji Temple, which holds I think one of the most beautiful gardens in all of Japan. It's in the Hojo building.
And then joining it, so we went inside.
Yes. So you went into the garden, which you can pay to get into on the inside, which is absolutely fantastic. It's a great representation of a small but packed Japanese garden. You do have one feature of it is the rock garden, known as what's called a Zen rock garden. But just know that there are no Zen rock gardens. That is kind of a misnomer. It's just a rock garden inside of a Zen temple. And a lot
thank
of
thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah, a lot of thought go into the placement of the rocks in a rock garden. Also the raking of the garden itself can be a sort of Zen meditation almost.
What is this complex though? The garden seemed to be the center point.
Yeah, the rock garden is probably the most famous feature of the Hojo residence. So the Hojo residence, where you're at right now, the Hojo residence basically was the head priest residence and was kind of made into this this garden complex is what it is. So it used to be where the head priest lived.
So then we hopped a cab and we went to this street that I loved, and I'm looking at the street going, oh, what a great bunch of little shops and things, not realizing what's at the top of the hill that's even more amazing and breathtaking.
Right. This is the Higashiyama area. So the Eastern Mountains is what it's called. And a fantastic walk up that street, as you saw with the shops and the cafes on the sides and the souvenir shops. And at the end, yeah, you're right. At the end is a World Heritage Site. It's a Kiyomizu Temple, pure water temple is what it is. And it's a fantastic, fantastic Buddhist temple. You can see like the main entrance there is kind of, they have the main gate, the Vermilion Gate, and you'll go through the gates. And then eventually you'll get to kind of the main stage is what it's called. And so it's actually built on overlooking a cliff. It's one of the most famous views in Kyoto, especially October, November, when the leaves are changing. This right here is a way to kind of purify yourself on the temple grounds. There's a ritual to it, and there's a set pattern of how to do things, basically. Yeah,
not
water is
just
very
the bottom.
important to this temple, and the fact that it's called Kiyomizu. Mizu is the Japanese word for water, so pure water. And so what it is basically is that there is a water that runs down from the mountains, and you grab a ladle, you wait in line, you grab a ladle, and the water splits into three different, you can see it splits into three different kind of streams. And then you reach out really far with your ladle and choose one of the streams. And the stream's either going to be, for long life or for educational success or for good health. And it's known to only really, you can't be greedy. You should really only do one. And you take that water and you pour it on your hands. And that's how you purify yourself at this temple in particular, at the Kiyomizu Temple. You'll see during academic season, you will see, 100 kids in their uniforms all dressed up, ready to hopefully get academic success by this water, when typically, really, they could have used that time waiting in line to study.
All right, so now we're heading down from the temple, down through the shops.
Kyoto is surrounded on three sides by mountains, and it has these little tiny streets like this one as well. And this street in particular is really cool to walk up and down. The fact that, like you said, there are shops on the sides. There's sake tastings, there's Japanese sweets. There's also little kind of ancillary temples and shrines going down the sides. Really, really nice walk. The Higashiyama district is a great little walk.
Then we went to a place where I was astounded by 1,000 golden statues.
Yes, this is Sanju Sangendo. Sanju Sangendo is, again, it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It's one of the oldest temples in all of Kyoto. And the fact that there are, 1,000 gold-plated Buddhas, right? Like kind of gold Buddhas, right. Right, is what they are. And they are absolutely stunning. Every one of them made differently, made around over 1,000 years ago. Kind of like the Terracotta Warriors, and the fact that they're all individually different. Yeah, just absolutely fantastic. They're also flanked on the middle by kind of bigger gods like Fujin and Raijin. Fujin being the god of wind and Raijin being the god of thunder. But yeah, it's an absolutely fantastic building. Super, super long. It's a very, very long building. Actually, they used to do archery on the inside. They still do. They do Japanese archery on the inside. That's how long it is. An arrow will go, and they'll shoot arrows at targets from one end of the building to the other. It's just a fantastic, fantastic temple to visit.
We've had sushi in a number of places.
Sure.
We like sushi very much. But we'd never had sushi in a room that was aided by an electric train.
Yes. So the Kaiten Sushi is basically revolving sushi, is very, very famous in Japan and all over the world now. But Japan is kind of, again, they were the first and they perfected it. But yeah, a lot of these places, right, the sushi will kind of go past you on the conveyor belt. You can choose what you want. A lot of times now, though, you can just order. You see there's a screen there, a touch screen. You can just order what you want, and then it will be delivered to you either via tiny train or just by the conveyor belt itself. Yeah, it comes to you very quickly. Again, it's a cheap, really, really fast meal. The menus are actually quite large. So even if you are a vegetarian, you don't eat fish, or you're allergic, maybe, then there are options for you at these places. You can get vegetable sushi. They have noodles at some of these places. And so you could do kind of what you like. Kurazushi in particular is very famous, especially to children in Japan. The fact that every plate, you can see on the right-hand side there's a slot for your plate. So if your sushi, if you finish your sushi, you can actually take your plate, put it into that slot, and then every five plates, you'll basically start a game. And then if you win that game, you get a little prize, which will come out via a different machine. And so a lot of kids will want to eat as much sushi as possible, so you can play the game as many times as you'd like.
I wish someone told me that.
you could be awash right now in tiny plastic junk.
I could have been.
Yeah, I know.
But it was really novel and great, and everybody was happy. It was a happy place.
That place. See, children love that place. It's fantastic.
Then we went to another shrine.
Kitano Tamangu Shrine is it's kind of a deep cut. It's a beautiful, quiet shrine, Shinto shrine, which is dedicated to the god of academics, the god of agriculture as well. It's over 1,000 years old. It's a really quiet shrine to get to. The grounds are quite large. Has a kind of a river that goes through it as well. You can see it does have the Koma Inu dogs, dog characters on the right and the left hand side. As you see there, one has the mouth open, one is the mouth closed. And that's for a couple reasons. One reason is a lot of people say that, well, it is the first letter of the Japanese alphabet is A, and the last letter is M. And so open mouth is A, basically, and closed mouth is Z. So it's kind of an alpha and omega. It's what it is, right? But another way to look at it, which I think is a deeper and I think a better way to look at it, is that the open mouth, you have the first breath of life. And the closed mouth is the breath, the last breath you've taken of death. And so the Japanese, if you know anything about Japanese culture or media, they love to be reminded you're all going to die someday. They love it. Right? I mean, you look at things like, for example, cherry blossoms, right? Cherry blossoms are what everybody wants to come to Japan to see. And, you know, I could bring you to Japan for cherry blossom season. And if the weather is perfect, there's no rain, there's no wind, the temperature is perfect. I mean, these cherry blossoms will bloom for about a week. And then that's they it. Fall to the ground, right?
Nice reminder again.
Exactly. They love to be reminded. It's like, yes, that's right. You know, they have what's called, you know, hanami. Hanami is basically you go out and you drink underneath the cherry blossoms, and you eat and you get drunk and you yell haiku at the sky, right?
Right.
And you're basically, right. You know, you're celebrating these cherry blossoms and the fact that they're here and then they're gone. And that's one aspect of those Koma Inu dogs too. And the fact that every time you go to a shrine, you're getting closer and closer to that closed mouth. Kind of grim, but also kind of beautiful.
What about these, there are a lot of cows. Why?
A lot of cows, fertility, right?
Oh, that's why.
Yeah, a lot of cows. I mean, there's different readings and stuff, but a lot of cows, yeah, fertility, luck even. Yes. Yeah, so, you can see there, you might see on the left, you see a woman wearing a white smock and kind of orange pants with kind of her pleated hair, with hair that's kind of parted down the middle. That's called a miko-san. A miko-san are basically, they do all the administration at the temple. They do all the sales of the charms and everything. They kind of keep things running in the background while the monks and the priests, they kind of do all the high profile stuff. I kind of look at Miko-san as being like nurses and priests and monks kind of being doctors, and the fact that they work together to keep things going. But the Miko-san are typically in the background. You don't really see them very often. That's why I like this picture, because you can actually see a Miko-san going home.
Wow.
They're translated as shrine maids, and they are. It is a job that typically young Japanese women will do. It could even be a part-time job, but yeah, they're shrine maidens is what they are.
So on August 16th every year, what happens here?
They do what's called Okuribi, which is the Bon Festival of Fire. So basically, they have certain kanji, so Chinese lettering, really, which are not carved into mountains, but they're burned into the mountain. And so they light them every summer. So you can see from various mountains around Kyoto, you can typically see them. If you just kind of can get on a high place in Kyoto, you can look out and see all the kanji, all the lettering that's burned into the mountains at one time, really is what it is. And this right here, this kanji, this letter here is dai. And so it means big. And so you can put it in front of a lot of things to mean that things are bigger, but it is kind of a fire festival that they do in Kyoto. They do it in other places around the country as well, but Kyoto is definitely the most famous one for it. Mm-hmm. That's one great thing about visiting Japan in summer, is that you have a lot of great festivals. I mean, Japan in summer is very, very hot, but you get the summer festivals, and those can be really, really fascinating to just rock up on and just say, I didn't know this was here. And just to go and participate in a festival is one of the best experiences and best memories you can have in Japan. And so don't sleep on summer. Summer's a good time to come to Japan. Even though it's very, very hot, you get the festivals. This is Kinkakuji here. And so Kinkakuji is known as the Golden Pavilion, I guess. It's kind of a series. It's a complex, but the most famous building being the Golden Pavilion itself. But you can walk around that whole area there. It takes about 45 minutes or so. And it's a really cool area to walk around. And obviously, it's one of the most stunning and one of the most photographed buildings in all of Japan is the Kinkakuji, the Golden Pavilion. And it has a really great garden and kind of moat around it as well. It used to be in the 16th century, I believe. It was a retirement villa for one of the old shoguns, one of the old military commanders in Japan. And when he died, his decree was to make it into a temple. And so that's why it's now a temple. But this whole thing used to basically be a retirement villa for that guy.
The garden.
Beautiful garden. It's really hard to take a bad picture of that area because of the way that they've set it up, where you can't really get in front or behind it. And so it's a really great place. You have on the very top, we have the Phoenix, which is quite ironic. The fact that, as you know, a Phoenix, right, you burn it and then it gets reborn in the flames. And so King Kakuji lasted for about 500 years before the 1940s, I think it was, is when this was burnt down by a monk. And so this is a reconstruction. And so it's funny that they have a phoenix up there. Yeah.
And then as we were ending our day, we went through this little village.
Yeah, you're in the Gion district, the old Hanamachi, one of the Hanamachis. And so it's one of the geisha districts, or geiko, as they call them in Kyoto. One of there's only five districts left. And so Gion being the largest and the most famous geiko district in the world, really. And it's unique because it has a lot of tiny little streets, which can be maze-like. It is one of those things that when people think of Kyoto, this is what they're thinking of, is this area in particular is what they're thinking of. And yeah, it's an area where the Maiko, the apprentice Geiko, and the Geiko, that's where they live in this area here. So you have a lot of Japanese and visitors as well. We'll dress up in kimono because that's what you do in Kyoto, you know, to kind of immerse yourself in the culture. But basically there's tons and tons of people in this neighborhood with cameras because all they want to do is catch a glimpse of a Maiko or a Geiko. That's all they want to do.
And then I just had to stop by a McDonald's.
You have to, right? You need a little bit of taste of home. You know, I have clients who want to eat McDonald's, which is absolutely fine. I never say anything about it because Japanese McDonald's have stuff you can't get anywhere else.
That's
it
what
is
I was
a
thinking.
Cultural experience.
So tell us some of the things you can't get anywhere else.
Well, in the spring, you'll typically have cherry blossom shakes, right? Sakura shakes, right? Now you can see on this photo here, the new Godzilla movie came out in Japan and in America. I know it's a hit in America as well, but they have Godzilla burgers, three Godzilla burgers you can only get for a limited amount of time. They have Ebi Filet, which is a shrimp filet burger. They have stuff that you can't really get anywhere else.
So is it healthier? I'm just
absolutely
kidding.
Not. Alan, yeah. Absolutely not. I don't want to say it is because it's definitely not. It's the same thing, but again, it's just a different experience, right?
Right. Well, at that point, we were pretty tired and we had to call it a day, but in order to do this, we had to catch cabs and subways, and we did as much as we could in that day. But inside Japan really made a difference.
Oh, thanks. I mean, you know, what we do is basically we add context to trips. You can absolutely do Japan by yourself, but we're there to add context. And honestly, we're there to save you time. Like you said, taxis and train the right trains and just the most efficient way to get around places. That's what we do. You think about if you're in Tokyo and you leave your hotel at 9 a.m, you start thinking like, well, where should I go? How should I get there? You've already wasted time. And we have so little time anyway, you know, on vacation, and that I would feel awful if any time was kind of wasted. And so you're right. That's what we try to do. We try to save you time so you can fit the most you can into your time in Japan.
So now we're going out to 126,000 travel advisors.
Okay.
How can they learn more?
You can go to our website, insidejapantours.com, and you can get connected with somebody who can help you out to plan the vacation of your lifetime. Because honestly, when I go back to America and other places and I say, oh, I live in Japan, they say, almost everybody said, oh, I've always wanted to go to Japan, right? It's never one of those places where it's like, well, that's next on the list. It's always like, you know, oh, I loved karate as a kid. Or, oh man, Nintendo, remember that? You know, and there's always a reason to come to Japan, or sushi, or samurai, or ninja. Doesn't matter what it is. There's always something pulling people here. Japan will always be cool. And why not pull that trigger? I mean, Japan right now, this is the place to be. It's the place to be for sure. Otherwise, you know, you might not get here. And if you do get here, we keep that in mind, the fact that this is probably the trip of a lifetime. And again, I would feel awful if I couldn't make a great trip into a fantastic one. And that's what we do at Inside Japan.
That's great. Well, Brett, thank you for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
And thank you again. And this is Alan Fine for Insider Travel Report.